I think every business person needs to spend some time learning how to be a competent speaker, not necessarily a platform speaker where they're traveling the world and being paid for it, but need to learn how to speak, how to communicate.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Peter Legg. Here's three facts I think you should know about Peter. One, he was in the half of the class that made the top half possible. Two, 45 years ago, he got fired and he turned that experience to build Western Canada's largest independent publishing company, Canada Wide Media. And three, his philanthropic life has won him the highest distinction award in British Columbia, the Order of British Columbia. And with that, Peter Legg, welcome to our podcast, Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. Appreciate being here. Very kind. Very kind.
Peter, I'm delighted to talk with you. Now, 45 years ago, let's start there. 45 years ago, you were fired. And I know that communication skills, the ability to communicate is a critical part to your life and your success in both life, community, and business. But 45 years ago, how would you rate your communication skills?
Well, in terms of what I was doing, I was the general sales manager for a radio station in Langley, called CJJC. It's no longer on the air. And I thought I was doing a pretty good job. We were exceeding budgets and had a great sales force. And the owner and manager of the station wasn't really big into sales, so he left all of that aspect to me while he conducted the on-air and the hiring and firing of those people. But we obviously had philosophical differences of how it should be done, even though I was not involved in the programming. I was just involved in sales. And so unceremoniously, one afternoon, a memo circulated around the station from him that simply said, Peter Legg will no longer be working for CJJC. It will be business as usual. Remember that memo. And I thought, well, it might be business as usual for him, but it certainly wasn't business as usual for me. Now, Langley and where we live are about a 40-minute drive in those days. And so I collected my, and it's his radio station, so he could hire and fire whoever he wanted. That's okay. And so I got in my car and I drove as slowly as I could home to tell my wife that I'd got fired. And the reason I drove slowly, because I needed to frame it properly. How was she going to react? What was she going to say? Was she going to divorce me? Was she going to kick me out of the house? What was she going to say, right? I didn't know. I was scared. So I pulled up at the house a little earlier than normal. And she said, oh, hi, sweetie pie. How you doing? Have a good day today. I said, well, it was a little different. Let me get changed. Let me have a glass of wine. Let's sit down in the front room and I'll tell you about the day. Great, she said. Not suspicious at all of what I was going to tell her. So I sat down and glass of wine, and I said, I got fired today. Dead silence. Not a word. Not a smile. Absolutely nothing. At least for 5 minutes. It felt like 5 hours. And then she said, that's good. That's good. You shouldn't be working for somebody else. You're the best salesman I ever know. You're a hard worker, you're dedicated, you're a great communicator, you're made for media. So tomorrow morning, this is what I want you to do, is get dressed, shine your shoes, go out there and find a business that you can own and run yourself and build. I thought, wow, Talk about the power of words. The power of words. Now, did she really mean that at the time? I really don't know. But that's really what I wanted to hear. I needed to know that she loved me, she cared for me, she wasn't giving up on me. So I got fired. Big deal. Millions of people get fired. They don't actually have a spouse like I had to turn around and encourage me. So the next morning, I shined my shoes. I got the best suit I had. And I heard an individual by the name of Al Davidson, who was a big, big sportscaster in Vancouver. And the radio station was CKNW. Much like CFRB in Toronto. And he had a magazine called Al Davidson's This Week. It was a television magazine. And he went bankrupt 2 days before I got fired. I had known Al. So I phoned him and said, Al, why don't we have lunch today? Great idea. I ended up buying his magazine. Now, he'd already printed next week's magazine, which in hindsight, I didn't realize how fortunate I was. And I paid $76,000. I didn't have 76 cents, but I said, I'll pay you. And he said, well, I know you will eventually. And we renamed the first edition to TV Week magazine. And 45 years later, it is still our number one magazine that we publish. And it has helped us grow and build this Canada-wide media with some very, very talented writers and art directors and salespeople and marketing people. And that's how we started.
Now that
still married to that same wonderful lady.
I would think so. Don't let her go, Peter. Don't let her
Absolutely.
Go. Now that's interesting. That day, your life changed. You received two important, but two very different types of messages. One was the message about being fired. And it sounds like your boss didn't even do it to your face. He put out a memo, which sounds kind of like a chicken way to do it. And then when you delivered the bad news to your wife, she thought about it and she paused for a long time. And then she delivered you a very positive, encouraging message. So I can imagine your emotions going down and up that day. It must have been a roller coaster.
Yeah, it was. It was. From the moment I got fired until I actually confronted her, I was thinking all kinds of things that she could have done and said, and she did the complete opposite, but it's exactly what I needed. It's exactly what I needed. She made a commitment to marry me and love me through good times and bad times for all time. And Wow. Then she was being tested and she came through with fine clovers. So we've been married 52 years and are crazy about each other.
That's fabulous. Fabulous news. Now, in building that company, so you and then you went out and you bought a bankrupt company for a sum of money that you had nothing, nowhere near. How did you know that was the right thing to do?
My gut said that I'm a very, very competent salesperson. And I know I communicate that to people. They don't think they're being sold by me. We do business together. And I knew, given time, given enough time, the fact it was a weekly magazine helped, because I then had another magazine that I had to get out next week, that I had contacts in the marketplace. I'd been in the marketplace for a long time. I hadn't sold print as such. It was all broadcasting. That I knew I could turn this ship around. Al was a great sportscaster, but he was a terrible business person. And so I knew, given time, I could make the sales necessary. We just had a small little, dinky little store that we had. That was our offices. So our expenses weren't very much. We charged for the magazine, by the way. We were only 5 cents a copy. So when that money came in, that basically paid for the printing. So I only had one staff who did all the TV listings, and I did the rest. So it was a reasonable gamble, the one that I wanted to take. Otherwise, I could find myself working again for somebody else, and we might not hit it off in a couple of years, and then I'd be out on the street again. So I don't want that to happen. I got to take control of my life, and I've got to be responsible for what I do.
You said you were a terrific salesperson. What were the skills? What were the core skills that you had that enabled you to be that terrific salesperson?
Basically, I'm a very good question asker, and I listen to your answers. And somewhere in those answers that you give me, or the client gives me, is the nucleus of how I'm going to sell you. You tell me how to sell you. That's kind of what I say to myself. So when I speak, and I speak to sales guys, well, not right now, but when I speak to sales guys, I tell them about the marriage proposal close. Okay. No one else has said this. The marriage proposal close works this way. If you go up to anybody, if I said to Shari, will you marry me? Her answer would be no. I would expect that. Then I say, why won't you marry me? Well, because you're married. So if I wasn't married, would you marry me? Well, yeah. Or there could be some excuse. Well, I'm married. Well, if you weren't married, well, I don't love you. Well, if you weren't married and loved me, would you marry me? So you keep repeating the reason they're saying no and eliminating them until they say yes. So if you take that, and that's, obviously I don't go up to my clients and say, will you marry me? But will you buy this proposal? No. Why? It's too expensive. Well, how do you mean it's too expensive? Well, you want $10,000. Well, is that more than your budget? Well, my budget's six. So are you telling me you'd buy this proposal for $6,000? That's exactly what they've said. They said, well, yeah. Then you have to quickly figure out, can you sell this proposal or whatever it is for $6,000?
Ask good questions.
Just ask good questions.
Wait for the answer.
And listen. Ask good questions and listen. And maybe not immediately, but somewhere down the road. So and you do it exactly the way I'm doing it. So, George, tell me, you don't have a $10,000 budget, but you have a $6,000 budget. You ask it just like that. It looks like you're making it up. So if I could price this at $6,000, could we do business together? Well, you just told me that. Yes, we could. I'll see if I can do that.
Now,
or whatever it is.
Okay, so there's your magic formula for sales, but communication has also played other parts in your life. You are a professional speaker. You've spoken all around the world. How did you develop that skill set? Did that come out of the sales ability, or was that something that you set out to separately build?
I think I discovered that by accident. I went to school in New Westminster, just outside of Vancouver. The junior high school was called Vincent Massey, and the senior high school was called Lester Pearson, one named after our governor general, one named after our 18th prime minister. And I was asked to give the address in the auditorium for the grade nines graduating from junior high to senior high. Somebody said, Peter will do that.
Was this when you were a student or later?
Yeah, I was a student.
Oh.
I was graduating with the rest of them into high school. And they said, well, we need somebody to do that. It wasn't really a convocation as such, but it was, would you address the grade nines? They're only graduating to high school. So I was asked, said, yeah, I'm happy to do that. So I did it and I loved it. And that got me hooked. And so when I went to senior high school for 3 years, I ended up emceeing most of the assemblies, speaking at most of the events, and learning it that way, learning how to speak. And I just kind of loved it and fell in love with it. And people seemed to appreciate what I was doing and how I did it.
Now, besides building and running the publishing company, you've also managed to maintain this full-time business as a professional speaker. Your speaking skills have been recognized by Toastmasters International. They awarded you with the Golden Gavel Award. That's their highest award. You've been recognized by the National Speakers Association in the U.S. with their CPAE Award, which is their highest award. How have those awards and that professional speaking helped you in your own publishing business?
Well, I think every business person needs to spend some time learning how to be a competent speaker. not necessarily a platform speaker where they're traveling the world and being paid for it, but need to learn how to speak, how to communicate. Because if we're going back to what I was just saying a few minutes ago about sales, what is that? That's communicating. How do I communicate with you? How do I get you to agree with what I'm saying? How do I service you so that we can end up doing business together? I need to communicate what my product is that you want that will help your business. So how do I do that? That's why speaking is important. And being on the platform, I mean, if you want to go through how I would do a typical speech, the speech part is maybe 10% of the 100%. It's all of the other things that make you communicate to be worthy to be on that platform. How you open, how you present yourself, how you say to the person who's introducing you, and you help them exit the stage, because that's their moment in the sun. 9 out of 10 speakers kind of push them out of the way verbally and get onto their message. But if you help them leave the stage with grace and say, thank you, George, it's very kind of you, I appreciate that, before you get back to the podium, and then you start your message. That visually to the audience says a lot. Well, this is a guy's a kind man, because you're probably working for the organization that hired me. So I need to treat you with respect. I've never met you. You're the introducer, right? Those are communication skills that not everyone possesses, nor are they necessarily interested in learning them.
So it sounds like effective communication goes beyond the words. The words are clearly critical, but it goes beyond that.
Absolutely.
And treating how you treat people, how you listen, those are critical elements.
Yeah. If I'm booked to speak, let's say in Toronto, let's say it's 300 people. Let's say I'm the opening speaker the following morning. So I would say to the person, yes, you're the speaker. Yes, this is the fee. This is how you're going to get to Toronto, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what's happening the night before? Oh, could you come to the reception the night before? Yes, I'd be happy to do that. Who would you like me to meet? And they'll give you a list of people you would meet. The president's coming in, the marketing director's coming in. What is his or her name? And you make sure that you meet them. Those are all communication skills. And perhaps the marketing manager is the individual that's going to introduce you. So you talk to them or talk to her and say, well, what's your story? Where did you come from? Where were you born? Et cetera, et cetera. Tell me a bit about you. I might be able to use that after your introduction. I might not.
So, Peter, were you a natural at speaking, or did you struggle?
I think I was a natural. I didn't know I was a natural. I think my voice and the timing and the ability to communicate was there very early in my upbringing. I didn't necessarily know I had that, but I knew when I started speaking, I can do things differently than other people do.
Now, I've noted, naturally, you have a wonderful voice, and that's a gift. I've also noticed in your speaking, you use stories tremendously well. Why use stories?
I think stories shape your life. Your story or stories shape who you are today. They've influenced you somehow, which is the name of my current book called, you know, The Power of Influence and Under the Influence. Both of them are important. You're under the influence for example, I'm 9 years old and my father has emigrated to New Westminster. My mother, a year later, and I'm the only son.
Came from the UK to Canada.
Yeah, I came through New York. And my mom and I got on a Greyhound bus and went from a Greyhound bus all the way from New York to Chicago to Seattle and then up to Vancouver. And I'm 9 years old, long trip. When we were in Seattle, we went to the Greyhound bus station coffee shop. And there was a woman sitting next to my mother. I hadn't realized my mother was flat broke. And she knew that I was hungry. And she said, Peter, would you like a French fries, a Coke, and a hamburger? You don't get those in England. I said, yeah, love them. So how she was going to pay for them, I had no idea. I didn't know she was broke. But the woman next sitting next to her kind of sensed she needed money and so slipped her a $5 bill and then slipped away from her seat, never to be seen again. So on the 3-hour ride from Seattle to Vancouver, I thought, is that what it means to be kind to strangers? And I'm 9 years old. And I thought, it probably is. So how do you be kind to strangers? What can you do for somebody else and enough other people that help shape who you are? So I don't necessarily use that story that often, but that woman, nameless woman, has inspired me to get involved with as many charities as I can, raising multi-millions of dollars of money. I haven't kept a penny of that. That's for the charities. Did that all start with that woman's graciousness of slipping my mom $5 for a hamburger, French fries, and Coke? I think it did. Now, I think that's a good story. It's not just a story. It's a real story. So I tell stories that are meaningful because you've had something like that happen to you. The audience has had something like that happen to them. Have they learned from it? Have they diarized it? Have they committed to memory? Have they allowed it to shape and influence them and what they're doing?
And it's interesting, Peter, when you told that story, I'm envisioning a 9-year-old boy with his mother at a bus station, the 9-year-old boy enjoying his fries and drink.
Yeah.
And that memory stays with me. The image stays with me longer than the words do.
Well, that's the power of stories, George. That's the power. So if you've got, and we've all got stories, some of us are ashamed of them. Some of us don't want them. Some of us don't think they're any good. But it's interesting if you tell the story, it's got to be a legit story. You can't, if I just make it up, I say, I'm just making this up. But I don't make up the story. Stories that I tell are experiences that have happened to me, what's been done to me, what I've accomplished, what I haven't accomplished, what I've failed at, all those things. And people like to hear that because they've had something like that happen to them, that they haven't necessarily seized on it to help them benefit them and grow their career and their marriage and their family and what they do in the community. I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not a genius. But I know what works.
Now, Peter, you've demonstrated your communication skills in another way, and that's in writing books. And in fact, you've authored 23 books, and you mentioned your most recent book, Under the Influence, how influence shapes the person you become. What's your key message from this book?
I think the key message is that all the stories that are in your life, all the things that George has done over his career have directly or indirectly influenced you. You may not have thought about it, but over the years, I've thought about all of my experiences and how they have helped me develop who I am and what I do and how I interact with people. That's the power of stories. And when they're your story and you tell it from the platform, it's unique to that audience because they've not heard it because you've experienced it. Sometimes you failed. Sometimes you screwed up. Sometimes you didn't happen. The outcome didn't happen the way you wanted it to. But nevertheless, you learn from it. And you're challenging them to dig deep down into their soul and their heart. What have they done? What have they failed at? What have they accomplished? What do they want to do with their life? Because life is very short. And so we need to learn from other people, and we learn best from their stories.
Now, interesting, those stories about when we failed, when we embarrassed ourselves, are probably the most difficult for us to share, but probably the most effective.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ashamed of the fact that I've only ever been fired once. And even if I were going to speak today and tell that story, if that was going to be on my program, I would still, in my heart, feel somewhat ashamed that I had had upset the manager to the point where he was going to fire me because I knew I was doing a good job as a salesperson. But it was the very best thing that could happen to me. So that's why stories are important. They shape and influence you. If I hadn't been fired, would I have been laid off when I was too old to do something else, when the license was taken away? And, you know, so I've learned from all of these stories, all of these good things and bad things.
Now, Peter, in the book, you talk about the power of influence that our stories have on us in our life. But what about the influence that we have on others, the people around us? How much responsibility should we take, should we accept, and how should we use that influence constructively?
Now, that is a very good question. Let's say there's an audience of 300 people, men and women, tomorrow morning that I'm speaking to. They're going to, and I'm at the cocktail party the night before. They're going to, those people that know I'm speaking, the keynote speaker tomorrow morning, they're going to look at how I dress, how my shoes are shiny, how I interact with people. Am I hitting on the chicks? Does that mess up my message? Absolutely. Do speakers do that? No question about it. Are they married speakers? In many cases. I don't do any of that. Do I swear? No. They notice all that. And that builds who I am. Am I polite and courteous and ask questions and focus on you as the president of the organization that just flew in from Winnipeg and you might be introducing me tomorrow? I want to learn something about you that night. So people are going to look at my conduct every day. Now, I'm definitely not perfect, but I try and work at it. I try and be exactly who I am. So when I get up to do my 45-minute speech or whatever it is, they're saying, he's authentic. I saw him last night at a cocktail party, and actually there was a girl hitting on him, and he didn't want anything to do with it. Because it's unnecessary, right? I'm married. I'm in love. Got 3 kids. I got a great company here, probably 60% are women. They need to feel completely safe. If I'm riding in the elevator with them or give them a ride to the bus depot or whatever I'm doing, they need to know I'm the real thing.
Peter, here's a line from your recent book. Your reputation enters the room before you do. That sounds like what you're just telling us about.
Yeah, it is. Your reputation enters the room before you speak, before you're at the cocktail party, before you're at the reception. And it all begins with maybe the meeting planner, the person that's going to hire you. And it starts many years ago. You have to be real. What they see has to be real. You have to be real as you are on stage, before you go on stage, after you're on stage. And they're little things, but, you know, I never swear at all, ever, ever. And I notice that if I'm having a meeting with some people who are swearing, about 15 minutes or 20 minutes into the meeting, they stop swearing. I haven't said stop swearing. But one of my friends at the Speakers Roundtable, Danny Cox, says, you are verbally challenged if you can't use good English. You swear, you are verbally challenged. Well, if I'm a speaker, I am not verbally challenged.
Here's another line that resonated with me from your book. Every one of us is an influencer, whether we realize it or not. Likewise, we're constantly being influenced by others. So we're being influenced, we're being inundated with messages that others are directing our way. And we, at the same time, as we move through our life, our workplace, our the business, the people, we are sending messages, not just with our words, but by how we act. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's true. We are who we act. That's who we are. We can't be two people. I need to be the same person to you right now as I'm going to be to Shari a little later today, as I'm going to be to someone I'm going to meet and have lunch with. I've got to be the same person. Obviously, we're doing different things, But yeah, we got to be the same person. People need to know. People need the general. This guy's a good guy. This guy's a good guy. You can trust him. You can believe him. You talk about Jimmy Patterson. You talk about Joe Siegel in Vancouver. Whatever they say is exactly what they're going to do. Whatever they say they're going to do that. You don't need a contract. It's done. Whatever it is, could be the right decision, could be the wrong decision they've made. But if they said they're going to do it, they're going to do it. Their reputation and their integrity is critical. And people notice that, and people are drawn to that. They're drawn to your integrity. They're drawn to you of how you conduct yourself and what you stand for. And that doesn't—it's not necessarily what you say; it's what you do, and what they. You may never meet that person.
Peter, as a polished communicator, both in writing and in speaking. And of course, the reason we communicate is because we want to make things happen. We want to have results. So for yourself, what has been your proudest moment that the thing that you made happen because of your communication skills?
I was an entertainer on a cruise ship from Vancouver to London 53 years ago. And I was told by the cruise director, you've got to buy some drinks down at the first class and tourist class. You must go and buy drinks for the tourist class a couple of times a week and sign it to your cabin, what have you. And that night I met a woman in a group of people named Kay. Now, the last thing I was going to do was get involved with a female. I was going to go to England to be a superstar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's where my dreams were, right? That's where my big dream was. But something happened. And we got married 8 months later and we're still married 52 years. That is the highlight of my life. The fact that I met this woman and I thought, this is completely unusual for me. And she was engaged to another guy. And I had to convince her that, no, he's not the guy for you. I'm the guy for you.
Ah, Peter Legg, it's an appropriate note to finish on today, a very positive way to finish a wonderful accomplishment in terms of communication. Marry me. It worked. And you've built a successful business as well as a professional speaking business and authored 23 books. Thank you very much for joining us here on Your Intended Message.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.